Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. I hope you are ready for Easter, or maybe it's post-Easter and you're just listening to this. Either way, Easter is my favorite holiday. Woo-woo! Because, not because of bunnies and chocolate, which I also love, but because of Jesus. The end of the story, y'all. Not totally the end, but close to it. Anyway, you can find out more at our website. Go on there and click on faith, and you can learn about what it means if you do not yet fully understand the meaning of the gospel. We would love to be the ones to introduce you to it. That said, here we go with this week's show. I'm going to step back from the roundtable. Let me tell you a little bit about this. Later on in the show, we're introducing our new clinical director here at Focus on the Family of our counseling department, Dr. Jared Pingleton, to answer a question from a 19-year-old guy who knows he's not quite ready for marriage, but he kind of has crushes on girls in the meantime, so he's trying to find a healthy balance there. So Dr. Pingleton will answer that. And then for our culture segment, Dana Gresh is back. She has a new book called Get Lost, and she's going to be talking to us, especially women, but guys, you might want to listen in on this as well, about when you're kind of craving that guy interaction, how do you find a healthy balance? What are you really craving in light of that? And then here for our roundtable, I'm actually going to step aside because you know what? We're going to hear from married folks, and that is not me. So they are going to tell us now, looking back from where they are in marriage, what it means to understand the values that are important in a marriage. Did they look at the most important things? And really, when the rubber hits the road, what has mattered most? So I'm very excited to hear this. A reminder that this week's show is sponsored by ChristianCafe.com. If you haven't tried out Christian Cafe yet, feel free to do so. We will link to it on the blog, or you can just go to Christian Cafe and then you just use the keyword boundless when you're looking at your trial membership. So we love you guys. Happy Easter, and here we go with the show.
Well, hey, I'm Patrick. I'm the stand-in married guy for Lisa, so I'm excited to be here with other married people, and you know, because we're all married people, we're going to talk about married people stuff, and so I'm excited to have Anthony with me, and Anthony's been married 3.5 years to Christina. And Chelsea is also with us.
Hello.
She's, yes, golf clap, please. Chelsea is married to Steve. They've been married for 9 months.
Yes.
So there's the rookie of the team here. And then Heather, she's been married 8 years to
yes.
Tony. And I've been married 7.5 years. And we've got some of us have been married for a while. And Chelsea is just...
Feels like forever.
Feels like, yeah, well, that's either a good sign or a bad sign. Maybe we'll uncover some of that here in just a little bit. And then some of us have kids and some of us don't, and that makes a big difference as well as you kind of go through the married journey. One of the things that I think it'd be cool to talk about is, you know, all of us at some point, you know, we have these ideas of who's going to be that special someone and what is it that's going to be important? You know, maybe it was the 10-mile long wish list. Maybe it was the, you know, close your eyes and go, Lord, just lead me to that person. But we all had these ideas of here's the things that would make a great spouse. And then you meet that person and you know, we all start doing that evaluation and to a degree, we'll start with Chelsea.
Awesome.
This is the freshest in your mind. What did you pick up when you were hanging out with Steve that made you think this guy is going to be a great guy to marry?
Well, at first there was lots of things that were like, I don't want to marry him because I think I had like that really long expectations of all of these things and things that I thought I wanted. And we were also 19 when we met, so that made things a little different too. We weren't extremely intentional at the time. It was just kind of dating to date. So I wasn't looking for specific things of, you know, what do you make? Well, I was. Most girls are in college. He wasn't, I should say. So some of the first things that I noticed, you know, for me, I really wanted a guy who like understood my feelings and my emotions, and I wanted him to be more feeling and stuff like that. And he's totally not that way. And I think that was my first serious relationship of understanding that's not necessarily how God made men. He made some men that way.
Most of us don't cry when we hear an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, and so that was an interesting journey, too, of just understanding, you know, we're not supposed to be exactly alike, but that was something that turned me off while we were dating. I was like, oh, you know, he doesn't get emotional with me and talk about things. But, you know, one of the things we were going to talk about today, I think that's what in marriage turned out to be a huge blessing, because he is firm and stable and secure, unlike me. Sometimes, you know, women were more like insecure and we're less stable and we're more emotional about things. And we just talked about this the other day. If I had ended up with someone just like that, we'd be a mess. And so I think some of those things I noticed while dating that I didn't really like, but have turned out to be lifesavers in the 9 months that we've been married are, you know, just his manly attributes of being firm and stable and the rock of the relationship and not, you know, all over the place, can't make a decision, emotional, kind of like how I can be sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, on the opposite end of manly attributes, Anthony, I'm sure you had some different criteria of when you're looking at Christina. And again, same thing, you know, there's probably things you started picking up going, these are great qualities. She is going to be a great wife.
Yeah. Some things that I actually wasn't so aware of while dating that became much more valuable afterwards were qualities in Christina that make her an amazing mother. And, you know, she's very gentle and patient. And that's something I took for granted as we were dating. And then, you know, now that we have two daughters, one age 2 and 1 6 months, yeah, I'm just realizing like how amazing it is for our kids that she is so gentle and patient and kind. In that same vein of qualities that make her an amazing mother, as we were dating, I would hang out with her while she was planning her lessons for Sunday school that she taught. And I would see how intentional and detailed she was in planning out this material that the kids could use in growing deeper in their relationship with God and their understanding of scripture. And she would avoid these like cliche, shallow sort of versions of the stories kids always get, and instead really desire to like draw them up into maturity regardless of their age. And so that quality of being able to, first of all, of even like caring to and being able to communicate the gospel and scriptures and the heart of God to little kids in a deep way is super valuable to me.
That's great. And see now, now, Heather, if you said something like, well, I just thought he was cool because he could sing, it's going to sound really shallow compared to, you know, what he's just...
He's very, very handsome. No, I think Anthony's right. I want to say something else, but going off of what he said, I don't think that there's any way when we were dating and first married that I could have anticipated how good of a father Tony would be until we actually had our own kids. And just to see how excited he is when he walks in the door to hang out with our kids for the rest of the evening is fantastic. And it's such a, there's no way that you can tell, you know, from him playing with other people's kids, just the love that he's going to have for our own kids and how excited he is going to be to be raising a family with me.
You know, it's interesting because in some cases, you know, there are the clues, there are the things that you start seeing as you're getting to know somebody. And then there's the things that they just show up and you had no idea. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, once you're married, I mean, everything changes. And obviously living and day to day and making all those decisions, the little ones, the big ones. And it's not just, hey, what do you want to do this weekend? You know, it's like, how do we plan every minute of every day and who's doing what and household management? And then you have kids. And a lot of times it's kind of a cool surprise as you're thrust into these situations that, wow, she's amazing, or, you know, he's amazing. I didn't even know they had these sides, because right. So much of it happens as soon as you are married, or you start moving forward past the dating and being engaged and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yep. I know, like for me, with my wife, Sally, you know, some of the things that I had my list too. And of course, some of them, you know, they're all, oh, I hope you like sports. You know, I mean, most guys are going to want that, you would think. But I saw I saw things like flexibility and an easygoing kind of nature, and things like that to me were important. And I started seeing how, you know, those things could be something that would make a big difference. Or her money attitudes, you know. I saw over time that, hey, here's somebody that's not out at the mall, you know, every single day. And look, I just bought my 90th pair of shoes. And I just bought, or, you know, everything was a brand name, everything. That's the kind of stuff that I tucked away because I knew that, well, you know, money can be a contentious issue, but I also was not a, you know, when I get older, I want a Ferrari. I was very conservative. And so there are those little clues along the way that help you start going like, this is cool. I like what I'm seeing here.
I had heard people tell me before, you can, you know, tell good qualities in a man and how he treats his mother. So remember the first time I was with Steve and his family, I was like watching his every move. Like, did he hug her? did they talk for a while? Does he know about her life? And so I think that can be hard because sometimes, you know, the younger, more immature men may not have the best relationship with their parents, but it is something to look at and to see how he respected her. Because that's, you know, the environment he was raised in, if he wasn't raised to respect his mom, there's a good chance he might not respect you as a wife. So that's another thing I think it's important to look at.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Note to guys listening, single guys, hug your mom.
And kiss her on the cheek. It's so cute.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Kiss her on the cheek. That you never know who's watching. And you might, you know, might be on a date next week because of it. So. What about, you know, the other thing, and I think Chelsea, actually, you all have kind of alluded to that. There's some of those things that weren't on your initial, oh, I really hope I find someone that, you know, type of list. But now you're so thankful that you're seeing these qualities in the person you married. Let's talk about some of those.
Well, this is actually something that Candace Waters told me several years ago, and I was an intern at Focus. And a few of us interns were talking with her and Steve, and we were talking about the men we were dating, and they were all so immature, and we were just so frustrated, and why couldn't they be these honorable men of God at the age of 20? And I remember Candace sat us down, and she was just like, you know what, girls, do you think Steve was as mature as he is now when he was 20? And we're all like, yeah, right, wasn't he? And she was like, no, you know, he wasn't. And I think, you know, I'd always desired this extremely strong man of the Lord. That's who I was going to marry. And I think I expected him to be at that state when I married him, or so like when we were dating. Like, I expected him to be that mature when he was 20. And I think that was kind of an unrealistic expectation for where we were at in our lives. And to hear her say that, she was just like, you know, look at him and what are his intentions? Is it his desire to grow as a man of God, or does he kind of feel like he's done, he's as far as he's going to get? And those are things to look at, because he might not necessarily be this pillar right now, but if he desires to grow into that role, you know, then give him more of a chance or whatever, because we're all like on the verge of breaking up with our boyfriends. And so I just really thought about that, and really Steve and I talked a lot about it, and seeing the person his dad was played a big role into it, how he was such a strong man of the Lord, knowing that that was something Steve desired to follow after his dad. And also to look at the other men in their life, you know, do they have a mentor? So are they striving to grow in their faith? And so I'll never forget that, because Steve has just blown my mind in his leadership in our marriage. And he wasn't that way when we were met when we were 19. And so I think women sometimes get really like, oh, he's not there yet. And we have to give him some room to grow and to breathe. And we can be a little bit stifling to that at times.
You know, I'll tell you, you know, my wife and I now, we have a 7-month-old and a 3.5-year-old. And if when we were dating, she was looking for this, you know, someday he's got to be the perfect dad. I mean, I was the absolute worst choice. I wouldn't hold other people's babies. You know, best friends might have kids, and I'd be like, oh, look, a baby. I mean, I'm completely mortified of children. And even when we were going to be having our first child, I mean, people run up, oh, you must be so excited. And I'd be like, yes, I am. I am very excited. And I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. Until you are suddenly a dad, you really don't know what to do. Yep. You know, and there are guys that had the great role models and all that kind of stuff. I didn't have that, but there's a case where if you're looking too far ahead, you'd never know. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's much that she would, if she was sitting here, that she would say, oh, I knew he'd be great with a 6-month-old because mm-hmm. it's like, no, probably not. You know, I was probably on the like last guy to have children list, you know. Let's hear from like Anthony with you with some of that, some of the surprise, like this wasn't on my list, but man, I'm glad I see these traits now.
Sure. I think my initial list was pretty shallow, and so my initial attraction for Christina was based off the fact that she's smoking hot and that she has a great personality.
All right. Well, there's two.
Yeah.
It's legit.
But the stuff that I've come to value so much since then really started with this road trip that we were on with several friends, and it was Sunday. We decided to have our own little church service in this hotel room, and during that time, I heard her pray for the first time, and I realized, like it really just pricked my attention, realizing that this girl has a serious depth and she's serious about her faith and like a real relationship with the Lord. And a lot of stuff came out of that prayer that she prayed for me. And it was after that point that I started thinking about her more seriously. And then also since we've been married, like her gift of encouragement has been really a huge blessing to me. And that's not something I really cared about beforehand. I'm not actually like a words of affirmation person so much, and I'm pretty stoic in general. But you know, like when you're dating, it's easy to kind of like hide the depth of your struggles. But in marriage, that stuff comes out, and so it's just amazing to have her see me for who I actually am, and you know the level of struggle and so on just in life, and to have her just believe in me and encourage me so well. That's a quality that I wasn't looking for or really valuing, but is, you know, very, very dear to me now.
Yeah, and that's a quality that I think would hit a home run with most guys. You know, we really, you know, it's tough sometimes, and it's great to have that encouragement from husband and the wife, both saying, we can get through this, and I believe in you. And how about you, Heather?
I think when you're dating, I think one of the things that you value and you kind of learn to expect from talking to other people is that opposites attract. You know, maybe if you're an extrovert, you're going to marry an introvert. And, you know, just that your personalities are going to mesh pretty well because of the opposite strengths that you bring to the table. But I think as you kind of get farther into marriage, you kind of maybe sometimes forget to see those positive things as positive for the rest of their life together. Like, Tony is a thinker, you know, he thinks about everything, he contemplates everything, and, you know, after a while, I was like, can we just not think? can we just act every once in a while? You know, but, you know, now that we have 3 kids and 1 on the way, I really, really value how thoughtful he is and how much time and thought that he puts into all the aspects of our family and the time and thought that he puts into his providing for our family and all those things. So you just have to remember to spin those things back around and remember that you mesh for a reason and that you were attracted to each other for a reason.
You know, it's funny, you know, what I'm continuing to learn and see in my own marriage is that there's a lot of those things that are the superficial, like, smoking hot, all right, you know. Sure, you still want to be attracted to your spouse. I mean, there's lots of those things, the common interests, all that. It does still matter. It doesn't go away. But it seems like, you know, at the end of the night, when you go to sleep and you're laying next to that person, it's like you're most thankful for those things that maybe weren't on your list. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the hard work and the perseverance, things like that. I know, like in our house, we have this thing, we don't really care. There's definition of roles to a degree, but it's not so like, well, we always do it this way and the guy should do this and the woman should do that. You know, what we've learned is let's just get everything done. You know, whether it's housework or taking care of the kids or finances, we're a team and it's just however we need to pick up and, you know, help each other. That's ultimately what matters. But that kind of flexibility mm-hmm. and stuff, that's probably not going to be on the top of somebody's mm-hmm. list. But, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of times it's the, man, we were a good team today. You know, we got through this crisis. We dealt with this challenge. We were able to talk through this, or we had a to-do this to-do list this long, and it got knocked out. You know, it's not always the fun, romantic, you know, let's take a walk on the beach and hold hands type stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's those things that really keep you meshed together. I think that you end up going, I'm really thankful for all this.
Yeah, the number one thing on my list when we were dating, and the number one thing that has withstood the test of time for being the most important to me, is our friendship. Like, that we can actually be best friends with each other, because we're living with each other, you know? We're roommates. We have to be around each other 24 hours a day sometime. And if we can't be friends with each other, then there's no way that a marriage would last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go from going on, like, dates and short periods of time to all of a sudden living together 24/7. So yeah, you definitely want to be able to be friends and have patience and kindness with each other. And I think during our premarital counseling, one thing that was said to us was, look at that person next to you. That's a person you will have to forgive more than anyone else for the rest of your life. It's like, oh, better learn how to forgive you better, because this is going to get good.
Yeah, you know, and actually it's kind of like, getting, you know, being with somebody, you know, or you're dating somebody, but seeing if they are sort of grounded in reality and kind of know what marriage can look like. You know, we joke a lot at our house, you know, those moments that, you know, one of us is sick and, you know, or you know, you're wearing like the clothes you never would have worn before, and you know, you're looking in the mirror and you're like scratching at something, and you know, and I'll walk by and like, isn't marriage awesome? We'll both start laughing, because you know, when you're dating, it's, oh, you get dressed up, everybody's gonna look perfect, and you realize quickly that you have no dignity anymore. You know, you're seeing each other in the worst possible situations, when you're sick, when you're like, oh, my stomach, I got to run to the bathroom, whatever. I mean, all this stuff happens, and you're just living it together. And, you know, to not be just shattered with, oh, what happened to my, you know, romantic husband and my romantic wife? It's like, no, this is just, it's life, but now there's someone else with you. You know, it's a totally different picture. So we've been able to throw some things out there and hopefully help some people that are looking at their lists right now. And maybe we've discovered a few things that, you know, when, like Lisa said, when the rubber hits the road, having somebody you can sing with may not be the most critical thing, though it might still be important. And we obviously, the little things and the big things all add up. But
they're not going to be perfect while you're dating, so give them room to grow.
Yeah, and they're not going to be perfect after.
Yeah, that's true too.
After you're dating. That's kind of room for grace, I think, instead of room to grow. Anthony and Chelsea, Heather, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This was a blast, and hopefully we've all learned from each other.
Yeah.
Group hug.
Thanks.
You will be our guide to the end, to the end. The Lord is with me. Forsake me. You will be our guide to the end, to the end. The Lord is with me. He will not forsake.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's culture segment. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show so far. You will certainly enjoy this segment because I am here in the studio with Dana Gresh. Welcome, Dana.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Very good to have you. Liking your jacket.
Red
leather
you.
One. Very feisty.
It would look good with your blouse there.
Spring.
I
know. I
think we should put them together.
It's okay. I'll probably take it after we're done with the interview. Well, you all know Dana because she's just written a multitude of books, many of which have been bestsellers. So you certainly are familiar with And the Bride Wore White. And then we talked to you not long ago about What Are You Waiting For?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one that we chatted with you about. You will also know Dana as the author of our Prep for the Honeymoon Girls Version article that we had in our sex series this summer, kind of rounding out our final kind of pieces for that, and got a lot of response from that article.
So fun to write.
Thank you for taking the time to do that and putting so much heart into that, because I think it really was a great, great bit of resource and advice for the girls, especially in our audience. Well, here you are. Apparently, you just write like, what, 5 books a year or something, because now you're writing again. You have written again. This book is actually going to be in stores and online this coming week. So make sure you check it out. And of course, we will have it linked on the blog as well. But it is called Get Lost, Your Guide to Finding True Love. And that's something that we occasionally talk about here at The Boundless Show. So Dana's going to give us her perspective. And actually, the springboard for this, she brings, and we'll talk about this a little bit, but how many of you have seen on Facebook, and when I say how many of you, I'm talking primarily the women, because you know that about 90% of you have put this as a status update at some point, how to get so lost in God that a guy has to seek him to find you. And that's kind of the jumping off point for a lot of this book. And so here we go. So, Dana, welcome.
Thank you.
Yay. Okay, you start off right from the get-go in this book, Dana, of talking about what you call the craving and women and how we have a craving. Now, I have a craving for a number of things, but you were talking about something specific here, and I want you to go ahead and explain that. What is this craving that we have?
For guys. And as I talked to college-age women, I would talk to them about how we do stupid things for a guy. I remember a time when I was in college, I was in line to be the yearbook editor, and I was on call to go into the yearbook office, and so I told my editor, I'll be there, I'm here for you. Meanwhile, my boyfriend calls. Hey, you want to go to the library? Of course, what do? Because I have a commitment that my college career relies upon. I mean, my mom and dad were very excited that this would be paying my tuition in the next year. I said, yes, I'll go with you. And he picked me up and we went. And on the way there, I'm thinking, you know, what do I say to my yearbook editor? I'm going to really have to lie. I'm going to have to come up with a good one. And I meant it. I mean, I wasn't going to look like an idiot. Well, as God would have it, when I got to the library, my editor's best friend was standing at the entrance, and there would be no lying about what had happened. And when I tell that story, which is completely embarrassing, you know, women say, yeah, I've done something stupid like that, too. Whether it's, you know, dissing a friend, a girlfriend, for a date with a guy, or wearing a short skirt, knowing it's going to get a guy to look, or posting your love or your relationship status before he does. Like, we are driven by this craving for a guy. And it's not a good thing. It doesn't drive us to the kind of love that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially I think when we just place kind of these abstract, I mean, we all have hopes. I mean, women have hopes for marriage, and those are good things. God designed marriage. But I think we too often, you know, in the abstract, start building these stories that maybe don't necessarily exist. And then we start putting hopes and putting legs to these things that are kind of become a little obsessive.
Are you saying we manipulate?
We do. Speaking of which, I don't think you shared your most embarrassing story, which you're going to do for me. Well, I just loved how you put it out there that you chose to wear these tight running pants.
Oh my gosh.
To run
Why
by
did I put that in there?
Your then boyfriend, now husband's dorm at college. That was awesome and very godly of you to do. But praise God, you did throw the running pants out when you were convicted after that. So that was good to know. Okay, so we have this craving. And, you know, I hear a lot of women that say, okay, because you're going to tell us basically that this craving needs to not start with being for guys, but it's a misplaced craving. Mm-hmm. It needs to be for God himself.
Yeah.
But then women right now are going to say, but you know what, Dana? God isn't going to hold my hand. Mm-hmm. God isn't going to be there for me. God isn't going to buy me a birthday present. God isn't going to.
So true.
So here is the conundrum that we find ourselves in, because we want this. And I love how you actually start by, you share a comment that a girl put on the blog about kind of this dichotomy of hating and wanting, and how she mm-hmm. actually hated the idea of marriage yet still wanted a man. Where does that source out of?
She had been in her mother and father went through a divorce. She had watched marriage done very badly. And so she kind of grew up with this notion that I am not going to be married. Mm-hmm. I hate marriage. But still, when she got to those years of dating, she had to have a guy. For 4 years, she was in a relationship where she gave him everything but the actual act of sex. And she said to herself, you know, why did I do that? I hated marriage but wanted a guy. And I think it goes back to the curse, Genesis 3:16, where God comes to Adam and Eve and he describes to them kind of what the laws of relationship will now look like because they have defied them. It, like gravity, like mm-hmm. you jump from a building, you're going to splat, right? So you have just messed with the intimacy of relationship with me and with each other. So now there are going to be consequences. And one of the things he says to Eve is, your desire will be for your husband and he will rule over you. Now, that's not what he intended for us to experience in relationship. But that word desire is really key, because scholars say that it means a violent craving. And it's like a craving so powerful that it borders on disease. So when you're sick, when you have a disease, you aren't functioning as you should. We aren't functioning as we should, women. We are giving into this craving when God has given us a prescription for it. And that's what the book is about. What is the prescription? So that we don't pursue a guy in such a way that it's unhealthy for us and for him.
Yeah. Well, and I think you talk about the, you know, you in fact have a little chart where you talk about when you have a craving for something, what you're really craving and what you need. And you talk about, you know, different food items, sweet things, salty things. I found that very helpful. People. I'm going to put that on my fridge.
Well, you know, one of my big cravings is carbs. Uh-huh. Love a good bagel, mm-hmm. some French bread.
Or two.
Right? Uh-huh. And yet, if you exist on that, mm-hmm. It just leads to more cravings. Carbs are like that. You just mm-hmm. want more and more because it's not really giving you the nutrients your body needs. And when we crave guys and act out on that and feast on just guy attention, we're not getting the nutrients our heart needs in feasting on God's love.
Mm-hmm. And you talk a lot about how really so much of this is sourced out of lies and a misunderstanding of our identity. What would you say, Dana, why is seeing ourselves as God sees us so important in learning how to break the bad cravings and understand that, you know, really we need to start focusing on the Lord first in this?
Well, because we can see ourselves for who we are. Our true value can come forth. His love erases our wounds. His love, no guy's love can do that. His love tells us the truth about our beauty. There's no mirror that will ever do that. You know, the only source of true love and therefore true satisfaction is going to be him. The word, I remember a time when I was just starved for love from a guy, starved. And I was a young married woman. I didn't understand why Bob wasn't meeting all my needs. And I just went to God and I said, this is really a bummer, but, you know, a lot of the loneliness that single women experience, married women experience it too. Mm. It's a matter of if you've tapped into the source. The grass is always greener on the other side. So I began praying through a book that Beth Moore wrote called Praying God's Word. And in there, she talks about feeling unlovable or not being able to really understand the love of God. And she uses a verse that says, what a man desires is unfailing love. Better to be poor than a liar. And what that verse is saying, hey, don't lie about it. You need to be loved. But she says that the words unfailing love are used 32 times in Scripture. And never is the source anything other than God himself. That's where our satisfaction comes from.
Hmm. So in light of this, you talk about, and you actually have, you know, and folks, you need to read the book to get the full picture of this, but Dana talks a lot about what she calls a love feast in light of this. But in the process of that, you also recommend a fast, and that is in taking guys off the table. Now, that is like unthinkable for some women because they're like, any guy that I meet who's potential, I need to get in on that game right away. Okay,
that's right.
I cannot do this. So what do you think is the value in that? Why should we consider doing that?
Well, you know, a physical fast I think, is in part so that we can contain our appetites. You know, I remember a time when I was speaking at a college and I just was dying to get to the Cheesecake Factory and I was going to get a manicure while I was there. Like, this was really important to me. And I felt like God's Spirit just said, listen, I want to be enough today. Can I just be enough today? And so I spent the whole day in my hotel room listening to worship music, reading the word, praying, you know, reading fun books, but just with God. And I made it under the guise and the bargain with God that, hey, tomorrow I'll go to the Cheesecake Factory and get a manicure. Mm-hmm. Well, do you know that he satisfied me so well that day that the next day when I woke up, I didn't care about the Cheesecake Factory. I didn't care about getting my nails done. I just wanted to spend another day with him. And I have seen countless women, believe it or not, when they step back from the guy game and they just say, okay, God, for a season, whatever that is, in the book I ask for 10 days, just 10 days. Take guys off the table and feast. I give them the scriptures, the songs, the stories to feast on God's love for 10 days. And what that does is it doesn't remove your desire for a guy. It doesn't remove your desire for the Cheesecake Factory, but it does put those appetites in proper balance. And if you want to enjoy guys, you've got to get that appetite in proper balance.
Okay. So speaking of balance, a lot of women are going to say, you know, okay, well, I want to do this, but it's almost like this weird workspace salvation. And I can easily mm-hmm. see how we can get ulterior motives in this, where we kind of play that game of, okay, if I do that, and if I spend more time with God, and I do this, whatever, then, you know, then God's going to reward me
yes.
with a solid guy.
Oh, no.
Then I'm going to earn it. I'm going to be, you know, and I had a friend who, you know, bless her heart, and this was like legitimate. She broke off a very bad relationship. It had gone on for several years. And she had to admit that in the back of her head, there was a little bit of, because I did that, because mm-hmm. I put that on the altar, now God's going to turn around and he's going to give me someone great. And she's still single and mm-hmm. she wrestles with that sometimes yeah. of like, God, I did that for you. Why didn't you do something in return? What's the encouragement for women?
Well, it's so true. The shallow end of the abstinence movement really does make us believe that we can bargain with God. If I wear the turtleneck and I'm modest and I live this pure lifestyle and sign my purity pledge and live up to it, and if I break up with a guy that's a dork, then God's going to show up with this knight in shining armor. Well, God doesn't ask us to live a modest life, a pure life, and a life where we love him above everything else so that we can get a guy. He asks us to get lost in his love, simply to get lost in his love. That's the goal. That's the outcome. And we really need to shift our thinking a bit. And again, I think that's why fasting from those things that distract us from the love of God is a really good thing, because we will find we are satisfied by it. Does that mean that there aren't hard things? Does that mean the Apostle Paul wasn't maybe lonely in his gift of singleness? I don't think so. But it means that he was able to live his life out in contentment and satisfaction. He says that.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say, you know, makes this look practical? Like, what if we are, because like I said on the front end, you know, the desire for marriage is good and we're actually called to pursue marriage, especially guys, you know, we're supposed to do it very intentionally. So what does it look like for us to be feasting on God's love for us and understanding what that looks like, but also be willing and open and, you know, open to the idea of marriage and mm-hmm. any guy that might come along?
I think it's all a matter of what your priorities are. And one of the girls who did the love feast said, you know, I'm in a dating relationship. I think he's the one. I think he's going to propose soon. I cannot take him off the table for 10 days. And I, you know, I talked with her. I was like, you know, I think you could, but what
maybe
can
nine.
You do?
Nine.
Maybe nine, right? Yeah. So she said, well, you know, how I'm going to balance my appetite is I'm going to say, unless I've spent time with God. For her, she wanted to spend an hour a day with God. Unless I've spent that hour a day with him, I'm not going to allow myself to text him, call him. I'm just, if it's 5 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock at night, till I set that time aside with God, I don't communicate with my boyfriend until after that. So, you know, it's all about finding where this fits into your life, but be brave. I mean, so many times we want to make things fit without doing the hard thing. And the hard thing sometimes is what illuminates us and stretches us to discover a really good thing.
Hmm. Okay, so not to let the guys off the hook, you actually tell women very explicitly that a guy has to be lost in God as well. Mm-hmm. What does that kind of guy look like?
Well, it's interesting because he could look like a lot of different things. I mean, he could be a seminary student or he could be a farmer. He could be an extrovert. He could be an introvert. He could be a guy who studies the word and loves studying the word, or he could be a guy who just likes worship music. You know, there are all kinds of guys who are lost in God's love and who are good candidates for marriage. But Ephesians 5 gives us kind of a list of things that these are non-negotiables in God's word. He says these five things are primary things. Before you say yes to a guy that you're going to date, make sure he's capable of these five things. And they are not small things. They're really tough things. And so I present those things in the book, and I encourage women, look for them. Mm-hmm. If he's not these things, then walk away. God has somebody who can fulfill those primary needs, those primary callings as a husband.
Mm-hmm. And how would you unpack the idea of trajectory in that? Because we talk about that a lot at Boundless of, you know, okay, your guy may not look like, you know, the latest awesome podcast preacher or something mm-hmm. like that, but he has the potential for growing into a great man of God. If he's a 22-year-old now, yeah. when he's 42, he's going to look a lot different.
Right. Well, one of the things in Ephesians 5, which I think is the hardest thing, you know, men are specifically called to agape love, the same kind of love Christ showed for us, this self-sacrificing love. And in Ephesians 5, it says that he loves his wife like the church. That means he lays his life down for her. And there's a lot of talk about female submission, but hardly the church ever talks about male submission. You know, right before it talks about husbands and wives and how they relate, it says submit to one another. And then it reminds the wives, submit. And then it says to the men, lay your life down. What's harder? The occasional, okay, Bob, you get to break this tie because we don't agree on this, or his call that every moment he's submitting his life to me. Now, as we record this, my husband, we had a kind of a hard week. We live on a little hobby farm, and we have this little herd of llamas, and I'm really kind of been close to a mama llama and her baby because I got to be the midwife. I got to be there
wow.
and clean the baby off and all this kind of stuff. So Scout, the mama, has been really special to me, and she died this week on Monday. And it's really interesting because my husband saw some sort of freak tragic accident. I don't know what happened, but he saw it. So he came back to the bedroom and tucked me in, and he said, you had a hard day yesterday, just sleep longer. And he called a friend, and they moved the llama. And in the middle of his work day, I saw his truck come home and go behind the barn. I wondered what he was doing. He called another friend, and they got a backhoe, and they dug a hole. And I didn't even know till the end of the day when I went out to feed the llamas, and I counted, and Scout was missing. And he was just driving up the road from work, and I said, I can't find Scouty. And he said, come inside. And all day long, he bore that. Like, he bore that burden for me. And he was so full of grief all night. How did I know when he was 19 that he was going to be that kind of guy that carried grief for me, that carried, that inconvenienced himself all day long so that I wouldn't have to know that hurt? Well, little things. He would fill my gas up. When we were driving somewhere, he'd say, stop, let's fill your tank up. It's cold. You don't want to get out. And he'd fill my tank up. He carried my books. If we went on a trip with a group of people, he'd carry my suitcase. I was the one that went into the food line first. You know, I was the one. He'd say, what movie do you want to see? He continually was inconveniencing himself so that he could serve me and submit. Hear that, ladies, to my needs. That's what makes it safe for me to submit when he has to make a tiebreaker.
Okay. So kind of as we wrap up here, Dana, it just occurs to me, you know, and did as I was going through the book, how really this isn't even only about guys and girls. I mean, there's a number of things where in relationships, I mean, even friendships, you know, I was discussing with some girlfriends the other night how we all want marriage for one another and certainly for ourselves, but there's that fear of being left behind of when mm-hmm. our girlfriends get married and what's that going to look like for us, and that wanting to encourage them and wanting to be happy for them, but at the same time fearing the own loss that we're going to have, you know, and almost tying ourselves to that and getting into relationships and friendships that can become idolatrous because mm-hmm. we're so clinging to them. What's just some good things to keep in mind for women and men as we look to really releasing our stories to the Lord in light of that?
As I was writing this book, you know, I really didn't want the goal of it to be to find a guy. I wanted the goal of it to be consumed in God's love. And I found that the message version of 1 Corinthians 7:17 has such a powerful message for our hearts. It says, don't be wishing you were someplace else or with someone else. Where you are right now is God's plan for you. Live and obey and love and believe right there. God, not your marital status, defines your life. And I think that whole idea is, whether I'm a male or a female, I'm called to be nurturing or strong or submissive to those other males and females around me so that I can display the authentic maleness or the authentic femaleness that God designed for me to live in, regardless of my marital status.
So true. All right. Well, we just got started, folks, on this conversation. Again, the book is Get Lost, Your Guide to Finding True Love. And I've been talking to Dana Gresh. The book is out on Tuesday, so make sure you check it out. Thanks so much, Dana, for carving out some time for us.
My pleasure. It was fun.
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have a new face and voice to introduce you to. It is Jared Pingleton. Welcome, Jared.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Very good to have you. Jared is our new here at Focus on the Family clinical director in our counseling department. And so we love it when our counselors come down and can weigh in on our inbox segments. And hopefully, Jared, will have you back contributing to this as you are able. But you've got a big job ahead of you, a lot of folks to serve who call in and write in to Focus on the Family. So we love our counselors. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and address a question from one of our listeners today, and I thank you for doing that.
Sure.
This guy says, I am 19 and definitely not ready to marry anytime soon. However, according to what I desire in a wife, I've observed a few girls who fit. The problem, though, is that I know I'm not supposed to be dating because I'm not ready to marry in most aspects. Yet I often catch myself thinking about it or them. I want to know if this is normal and what I should do to stop if this is a problem.
Well, several things jump out to me about this young man's question. Number one, his wisdom and his maturity. I think it's harder to grow up now than it's ever been in history. And the complexities of economics, of social pressures, of the changing work world, of relationship pressures, I believe are more complicated and intense than they've ever been. So what's normal is this young man's desire to think relationally, to look ahead in life to marry. What's healthy is that he's not rushing into it. And what I really commend him for and want to underscore and affirm is that he is looking wisely at making good choices. And he's thinking proactively, not reactively, about what he wants in a prospective wife. And I think those are the things that are healthy. As to, you know, is he not ready yet? That's, again, wise. The research shows that people who get married age 20 and younger have a 90% divorce rate. So I think he's very, very wise in realizing he's not quite ready, perhaps emotionally, financially, relationally, But it's still smart to look ahead. So I think this is a great question.
Yeah. And that is good because we talk a lot here at Boundless about being in a position to marry, especially for guys, and that they're seeking wisdom, that they have mentors who are kind of helping coach yes. them in those life skills that they need in order to move into that stage where they're going to support a wife and eventually a family, most likely. So what would you say, Jared, what would be some good advice for him just kind of in the meantime kind of stuff? Because he's saying he really wants to be married, but as he waits for his life to kind of catch up to be in that position, I mean, he obviously can't, you know, we always harp on guys, you know, stop wasting your time doing this, video games or whatever. Right. I mean, is he wasting his time like checking out all these women or how can right. he kind of find a balance there?
Well, that's a tough question. My short answer is a very obscene four-letter word. It's wait. Mm-hmm. And that's a terrible word. It really is. But when I think about this young man's dilemma, and I empathize with that struggle because, you know, he's in many ways probably desiring all of the wonderful blessings God has for us in marriage, but that's emotionally and physically, mentally, he's aware he's not ready for doing that well at this point. But I think, to me, a bit of advice I would recommend to him is marriage is not so much about finding the right person as it is about becoming the right person. So if he could channel that energy into personal growth, developing some relationships perhaps with an older man that could really mentor him and disciple him through this process, helping himself find, okay, what is there about him that may not be ready to that prospective young lady? Because this is not all about, you know, his side of it. It's what's best for her too. Those are the things I would suggest he focus on developing in terms of his own character, his own integrity, his own personal strengths.
Okay, great thoughts. And yeah, I would just add, I mean, from what I know and from what I gather, I mean, it sounds like he's a healthy guy and yes. that this is going to be a great motivator for him to grow up. And so kudos to you for, Jared said, you know, for recognizing that and for wanting to move ahead, wanting to move into adulthood. And so it looks like you'll probably get there sooner rather than later and hopefully in a healthy way. So thanks hopefully. So much for weighing in on that. Okay, that is it for this week's show, everyone. Please do write to us, editor@boundless.org, in the future if you want us to answer your question, which we love doing here, whether it is one of our counselors or whether it's Candace or someone else who weighs in on an issue that you are concerned about. And in the meantime, I hope that you're checking and searching the site for inbox questions that we have answered in the past, as well as our Q&A feature. Make sure you look for those. And if not, we will see you next week. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.
A donor-supported ministry of Focus on the Family.